Hello, DG Shippers. This is Lindsay again, because unfortunately Persephone 33 has been having some technical difficulties. She apologizes for that, and the next podcast should be coming out as soon as she gets everything settled again. Her computer crashed, so I don't know exactly how long that will take to fix. But anyway, I'm here, and I'm just going to read one short fic because, well, this is happening rather quickly, and I decided that I would read one of mine because that's what I have permission to read. So, first of all, there's some news. For those of you who don't watch the news page, which is the index page of the main site, why don't you? But anyway, the recent news has been that there is a new RPG, a Harry Potter RPG, that is being participated in by several members of the GG community. In fact, I believe almost all of them exclusively are. So several people that you probably would know are participants, such as Persephone 33, Minuet, and others, including me. I play Neville Longbottom. It's at LiveJournal, and that would be community.livejournal.com/CSI underscore Muove, Muove, that's Italian. If you don't think you can get that down, then it's also on the news. I believe it's still on the index page of the site with a link. It's you can watch it, of course. And I'm not sure if they're still taking characters. I believe they are, but only if they're Hufflepuffs, or possibly Ravenclaws. But anyway, there's obviously a lot of Slytherin characters. We love our Slytherins around here. So, it's really cool. You should check it out. And the other bit of news is that right now we're looking for affiliates for the site. We've kind of slacked off on that for the last year or so. I just got around to putting all the affiliate stuff back in all the skins. So, we're looking for people to affiliate with. I've gotten, well, one email so far, so I'm trying to get the word out there. If you know of a site that is Harry Potter or fandom related that does an affiliate type thing where they have an affiliates page or maybe some link or image on their main page or something, it's a trade we're gonna do, which I suppose is probably very would be beneficial to whoever we're affiliating with. I don't care if they're smaller sites myself. Obviously, everything has to be approved by Minuet in the long run, but we do get a lot of traffic. Probably, I think, over 1,000 unique visits per day. So, there you go. You might if that sounds good to you, I think we get about 2.5 million hits, not unique visits, but hits a month. So that's, more than one person makes more than one hit. So, anyway, that is your geekiness of the day. So, we're looking for affiliates. Let me know. Or you can also email Minuet or through the site contact us link in the menu. Now, on to the actual fic reading. I was going to do birthdays, but there's a lot. So, I guess I could mention that obviously. It's July, and so July 31st would be J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter's birthday, as well as July 30th is Neville Longbottom's birthday, and there are several other people on the forums who have submitted to say that it's their birthday in July. So it was Alluring Twilight on the 2nd, so happy birthday, it's belated. Althea is the 10th, maybe September. XX is the 11th. I'm the 16th, so happy birthday to me. Julius Caesar is the 20th. Salian 22 is the 22nd. Elia Eru, I hope, sorry if I mispronounced that, is 27, or is the 27th, sorry. Jessica, who is on the 29th, and Stick of Gum and Kelbel are, or Kelbel, yeah, sorry, I can't read very well. The 30th. As well as Neville Longbottom. So you have that in common. Neville Longbottom is really awesome, so good for you. The fic that I'm going to read today is by me, Lindsay, and it's called Closed Life Through a Lens. This was my exchange fic, and I don't exactly know where it came from. I suppose we'll do a little bit of the author's thoughts section since I'm reading my own fic. What it is it's based off of a prompt, and it was written for Black Alnair. I'm always nervous I mispronounce people's names, sorry. The prompt was basically, Ginny tracks Draco down in the poor rural interior of the Cerrado in Brazil. The focus should be on the DG dynamic in Brazil, not on her search for him. It had to have a happy ending where they were ended up together. She also said what pulls Draco and Ginny apart should be internal misgivings that one of them has about their relationship or about their worth to the other, and the resolution of the issue should occur through efforts by both of them. And it was mandated, which I thought was really cool because I love language, that it had the following dialogue in it. Draco to Ginny, for every second, every minute, every hour, every day of my forsaken life. Para sempre, which means for always in Portuguese. Ginny says to Draco, I'd follow you to the ends of this world, of this life and the next, em qualquer lugar, which means anywhere. I don't know that I pronounced that properly. I apologize. So anyone who knows Portuguese or is Portuguese, I know Spanish, so I can read it and see what it says, but I don't know how to pronounce it properly. And that's about it. No character death, etc. You can read the rest of it. It's at the bottom of the fic, and it's also archived at dracoandginny.com in my profile, as well as it should be at the live journal site for the actual fic exchange. And so when I was writing this, I thought to myself, the Cerrado, I don't know anything about the Cerrado, but I happen to remember that there had been an article about a region of Brazil, I couldn't remember which, in National Geographic. So I went back and I found all my National Geographics, and I thought to myself, not the right region, unfortunately, but it was about cowboys. And I said to myself, well, let's look up the Cerrado. So I looked it up, and all they do there is mainly they have a lot of ranching, some ecotourism, and a lot of horses, stuff like that. So I then thought, yeah, cowboys would be awesome. I mean, I don't know why. I just thought it'd be great. So I pondered that for a while, and I thought about the Cerrado, and I had guessed that it meant closed because it does in Spanish, and it does. And I thought about that and about different motifs, and one day I just sat down and I just wrote this without really even thinking about it. I don't know exactly what happened. It just came out, and I actually think it's one of my best fics so far, but I'll let you decide. Closed Life Through a Lens by Lindsay. When Ginny was a little girl, she had been full of dreams. She'd spent hours and hours imagining what her life would be like, what she'd do for a living, a teacher, where she'd live, a quaint, cozy cottage, and how many children she'd have, 3, 2 girls and a boy. Even the Chamber of Secrets hadn't been able to rid her of her fantasies, since, after all, hadn't her knight in shining armor come to rescue her? Then war came and slowly but surely shattered all her illusions. And when Harry asked her to marry him, and she didn't even know what she wanted or if she could want anything again, she laughed. She said she needed space, but the truth was, what she really needed was something to fill a space inside of her. Most days she doesn't even notice it, but sometimes she becomes painfully aware, and that's when she turns most to her camera. He'd tried to fill her space, to be her center, but he couldn't. She never felt sad about it, really. She's not felt sad or happy or truly angry since. Well, for quite some time. No one seems to understand that, because they look at her pictures and they see all these things. They feel all the emotion in her work that she cannot feel herself. Sometimes she wonders how that's possible, but it's only a passing thought. So she watches. She doesn't know if she's waiting, or if that's her state of being, and she doesn't even really think about it. It was humid, making her clothing into a damp, cotton second skin. The noise of cars and pedestrians mixed into a cacophony of sounds, branding Brasilia in September with a signature all its own. Every place she'd been to had its own noise, unique in place and time. London in summer was loud and quick, humming with potential. The honking of horns there was a white noise behind the voices of a thousand tongues. A spring afternoon in Madrid was bright and relaxed, with clusters of happy voices coming from cafes and bars. Paris, Hamburg, Vienna, Athens, even Delphi, quaint Delphi, nestled into the mountain, where people raised chickens in their yards next to the thousands-year-old wall where slaves had inscribed their freedom. Even Delphi was unique, the low murmur of speech over the sound of the wind in the olive trees in the gorge below. But she wasn't here to listen. She was here to see. Javier would be back soon with a friend. Javi had friends everywhere. They met one afternoon in a Spanish town she'd wandered into for the day. He'd seen her in the Plaza Mayor, trying to catch a shot of a stork perched on a tower. The white-black of the bird had caught her eye against the brilliant azure of the sky. She'd liked the idea of the bird haunting the battlements instead of the soldiers of a thousand years ago. Javier invited her for a copa, and she didn't turn him down. Over wine and olives they'd talked. She'd shown him some of her photos, and he decided she had potential. She'd become his apprentice of sorts. Javier was a photojournalist, and Ginny liked to take pictures. She followed him around from country to country. He frequently told her she had a good eye, and that she caught things he missed. She liked watching people. They were on their way to a cattle ranch for a piece. So far, they'd followed cowboys in the Great Plains, vaqueros in Mexico, gauchos in the Pampas, and now they were here in the Cerrado. They were working on a larger piece about the impact of pastoralism on biodiversity. It was Javi's sense of balance that kept Ginny interested. He saw the whole picture, or as much of it as any one person could. Javi's friend Alberto, a Brazilian journalist, was taking them to see the ranching operation of the friend of a friend. Ginny watched as the miles rolled by, staring out at the open grasslands and short, twisted trees. She thought they looked lonely. If they weren't in a moving vehicle, she would have taken their picture. She liked taking pictures of cowboys. Normally she preferred inanimate objects, but cowboys always seemed to know who they were and never tried to be someone else for the camera. Cowboys also worked outdoors, where she liked to work. If she were indoors for too long, she'd begin to feel restless. "What do you know about the Cerrado?" Javi asked. It was ritual. Even though he always researched their locations, he liked to hear what she knew. "The Cerrado. It's a big grassland, a tropical savanna, dry most of the year except for the summer rains. In the last few decades, it has been opened up to cattle ranching and soybean farming, mostly." "That's it?" he asked. "Well, no," she spoke. "I'll tell you the rest when I see it." Looking to her, Javi asked, "Do you know what Cerrado means?" When she merely shook her head, he responded, "It means closed." He watched her impassively for a moment before turning back forward. Looking out the window, she thought it looked very barren and empty. She could see why it had been closed so long. The ranch was situated in the middle of a vast, empty plain. From horizon to horizon, the view was almost completely unbroken. Ginny got her camera out as they pulled up next to it, snapping a few quick shots of the buildings in front of a backdrop of brilliant blue sky. Despite the fact that they were surrounded by so much emptiness, the ranch house and its accompanying outbuildings didn't seem as small or alone as she would have expected. There was an appealing, quiet strength about them. She was introduced to the owner and his wife, who showed her to a bright and cozy room decorated colorfully. It had a homey feel which reminded her of the burrow. She tried to catch a few abstracted shots of the bedspread and some of the furniture. After a consultation with Javi, she settled in to rest until mealtime. Taking off her shoes, she lay back against the wide pillow, but she couldn't sleep. Instead, she listened to the noises around her. A dog barked in the distance, and somewhere in the house a radio was on. Someone light-footed was moving around the rooms, humming softly. After some time, the smell of food cooking drifted to her. She stood up, replacing her shoes, and wandered along, following the scents. The kitchen also reminded her of the burrow with its old-fashioned look and well-worn utensils. The ranch owner's wife saw her and smiled. It was genuine, if reserved, stretching across her tan face and up into her eyes. In that moment, she looked very pretty. She allowed Ginny to help her in the kitchen, and it was pleasant despite their inability to communicate with words. Ginny decided that they weren't really necessary. Most of the peyoes, the cowboys, were out with the cattle, and Ginny and Javi were going to ride out to see them. When they'd first started their work following around ranchers and their men, they'd never been close to a horse. She'd never been close to a horse. Over the last few months, she'd gotten fairly proficient, something that Javi remarked upon was something she thought might be pride. The little group of four stopped and dismounted for a rest, and the man who was taking them to see the cattle handed her a piece of soft, chewy bread. She chewed it slowly, seeing a short, twisted tree nearby. Taking up her camera, she walked over to it, through the myriad of plants that brushed at her legs. Up close, the savannah didn't look nearly as uniform as it had from the windows of the automobile. She saw now that there were many types of plants, some flowering beautifully, with space in between them. The trees still fascinated her the most, though. They were gnarled and bent with hard, tough bark and strange leaves. It was a tough life, being a tree in a place with little moisture for most of the year. She placed her hand on the bark, feeling its roughness beneath her fingers. A many-legged insect made a slow, crawling path up the side, and adjusting her lens, she snapped its photo. Looking up, she caught another shot of the azure slivers of sky showing through the twisted branches of the old tree. Leaning back against it, she felt content for the first time in a long time. Before she knew it, Javi was waving her back over, and they continued on. The sun was low in the horizon when they reached the cowboys' camp, washing everything over in a strange red-gold light that made it seem as though you could reach out and grab a handful of it. She'd had her camera around her neck since their last stop, and had paused whenever she saw a good composition. The horizon line was particularly fascinating. She tried a few shots of a bright pink flower in the foreground with the endless grassland stretching out to the horizon behind it. She'd showed it to Javi on her camera's display screen, and he'd said he liked the idea of showing how everything in the Cerrado could seem part of a vast sameness until you looked closer. She'd blinked, confused. That hadn't been her intention, but she realized the interpretation. She'd taken the picture because it reminded her of herself. Two men stood up from a small group and approached as they neared. The ranch hand who traveled with them seemed to be issuing instructions, and they took the reins from her hand and handed her back to her. She took it with barely a glance at the man. Her eyes were riveted to the sight in front of her. A third cowboy sat in front of her, a short distance away. He was leaning forward, cleaning something, his hair falling forward. She took all this in, but it was his bare back that had caught her attention, because it was decorated with a tattoo. It was beautiful. The gold-tipped claw of a red dragon reached for his left shoulder and the body curved away, the tail curling around his right side, just below his ribs. Its wings were furled and its face solemn, telling her of unspoken sorrows. The odd, ethereal light made it look like it could jump off his skin and fly away had it a mind to leave its master. She hadn't realized she was taking pictures until the dragon shifted and moved as the man peered over his right shoulder. He merely gazed at her. Her breath caught in her throat suddenly, and she took a deep breath. "Ginny," Javi called. "Hello, Ginny." She turned to him, startled. They spoke about plans for the night, and when she turned back, the man with the dragon tattoo was gone. Later that night, she sat alone, paging through a Portuguese-English dictionary by the light from her torch and the dying campfire. She was startled when the shower of sparks went up from the fire and it burst into a series of angry popping noises. Three of the ranch hands sat down on the other side, and a fourth threw on another log. It was the man she'd seen earlier. Before, she'd been so engrossed in her work, so startled, that she hadn't taken a good look at him, and she hadn't called up the image on the camera's view screen because she was trying to save battery. Now, with the flame shooting up high and the blackness that edged along the circle of light, she couldn't get a good look. She made out light-colored hair, long down to his shoulders, and the typical garments of the other cowboys. He looked over to her, seeming to notice her stare, and with a quiet word to the man next to him, got up and walked away. There was a determinedness to his stride that she noted with curiosity. The other cowboys were chatting and laughing, cooking something over the fire, when Javi returned. He sat down next to her. "So who's this dragon man?" he asked, reaching into his pocket for a cigarette. "What?" Ginny asked, startled. Javi gazed at her assessingly. "Earlier, when you were taking his picture, you looked like you'd seen a ghost," he answered after he'd pulled out his lighter. She frowned. She didn't remember feeling anything unusual at the moment she'd been snapping those photos. "It must have been the light," she replied, tucking her jacket closed, even though she wasn't cold in the slightest. Javi took a few drags on a cigarette, then spoke. "I've heard something interesting from Alberto." Ginny was inwardly relieved at the change of subject. "There's a fazenda near here that I think we should visit. The owner's heavily involved in the local sustainability movement." Ginny nodded, her mind going over the words Javi was speaking without internalizing them. Her eyes kept going back to a spot at the edge of the circle of light, to the left of the cowboys. "Alberto said that your dragon man used to work with the nearby fazenderos on one of their ecology projects. That's how he came to the area." She stood up abruptly. I'll be back." Several paces outside the light of the fire, she stopped so her eyes could adjust to the darkness and light of the moon. She didn't know where she was going. It was as though she were being compelled. The scent of the cerrado wafted to her on the breeze as she brushed through the grasses and bushes that ringed the campfire area. They had been removed there so as to avoid starting an accidental wildfire. She could hear the stamping and shifting of the cattle in the distance and the jingling of a rider as he passed by a distance away. Moving forward again, she saw a glint of something to her side. Looking closer, she saw that it was a bright point shining in the light of the moon and the nearby flames. For a moment, she was reminded of the ornaments on the Christmas trees of her youth, but the notion fled quickly as all the disjointed images coalesced into a solid picture. It was him. Dark shadows threw the features of his face into deep relief. It was almost menacing. She stepped closer. Another amber flash and his eyes turned to her. He was still merely looking at her. The night noises washed over them, and the moon beamed down on them timelessly. "Where's your camera?" he asked, screwing a cap back onto the bottle he held in his hand. "I..." Her voice caught in her throat, and she cleared it gently. "In my bag." "You shouldn't wander. You might get lost, or scare the cattle." He moved toward her, grabbing her elbow lightly and steering her back toward the campfire. Her skin contracted at the touch. His hand was warm and goose flesh prickled, even in the warmth of the night. She stared up at him, her eyes moving along the stubble, brushing his chin and across to his lips. Her stomach burned. Javi looked up as they neared. "I'm for bed," she said, forestalling the questions she could see in his eyes. Camera strapped safely around her neck, Ginny waited as Javi checked over her horse as she settled it herself. In his younger days, Javier had been associated with the Real Escuela Andaluz and was very particular about riding safety. She'd never heard the story why. Alberto, Javi's journalist friend, had left the day before back to the political beat in Brasilia, and Javi was left as the communicator. He'd spent some time in Lisbon, but found the Brazilian form of Portuguese somewhat beyond him after all these years. She could tell when things got difficult, because he started to throw in Spanish words. One of the men approached Javi just as he had turned to speak to her, and using her basic knowledge of French and Spanish, she could barely make out a general sense of the topic. There was some trouble. The man followed as Javi approached her. "Looks like we'll have to split up," he said. "They're saying it's going to rain tomorrow, and if we want to see down in the gorge, we have to go today. They don't know what the water table will be like after the storm." She looked up at the cloudless blue sky but didn't question it. "That ranch owner we're going to see is going to be gone any day," she responded. "So am I going to there or on the nature tour?" She was only half joking. She was sure by now that she knew the word for tourist in at least 30 languages. It always seemed to stand out of conversation, even when she didn't know the language, just as she stood out in most foreign places with her bright hair. "You're with me," a voice behind her responded, "to the valley." She turned her head to the side, assessing him. It could only be him speaking English. He was mounted, staring down at her with the same kind of look that she'd gotten the last time she'd learned a new way of saying tourist. Her camera strap twisted around her left hand, she nodded. As she moved past Javi on her way to her horse, he leaned in to murmur, "It was a red dragon that made the angels fall." At her blank look, he quirked his lips up in a wry smile. "In Revelations, and St. George killed his for causing the plague. But in Asia they're a powerful and intrinsic part of nature." Shading her eyes, trying to see his expression, she responded, "What are you trying to say?" His smile faded, and his enigmatic reply left her slightly unsettled. "I'm only wondering what sort of dragon he is." They'd stopped after a few hours' ride. It was springtime, but the sun was already beginning to feel hot and the humidity oppressive. The noise of the breeze and the plants and the buzz of insects surrounded them, but the silence between them made it all seem muted. "Why are you accompanying me?" she asked, her voice firm, loud in the void. He shrugged. "Because I speak English." She didn't respond. Movement caught her eye, and she was immediately flicking on her camera and moving towards it. Whatever animal it was eluded her, though, so instead she focused on the small paths she could see winding their way through the hardy plants. The gaps between the bushes and other plants were constantly changing with the wind and perspective, and every angle she tried failed to capture the nearly hidden tracks. She let out a breath she didn't know she was holding in a sharp burst, blowing her hair into her face. Turning quickly, wanting to move on, she almost crashed right into him. "Ready?" he asked, his eyes focused disturbingly on her face. "Yes," she responded, looking over his shoulder to the horses. She nearly jumped when his fingers touched her face gently, softly brushing her hair behind her ear. Abruptly, he turned and led the way back to their mounts. It was a second before she moved, watching him silently. She almost forgot to turn off her camera again. It would have been difficult to believe if she wasn't seeing it with her own eyes. They come to a break in the flat landscape, a deep gorge, slashed in the ground by powerful ancient forces. They descended down and down into the valley below. It was a whole other world, nearly. The flora was much different here on the valley floor than it was on the ridge above. She was surrounded by short trees, they were still drought-adapted, and it felt strange to look out and not be able to see the horizon stretching as far as the eye could see. He let her wander for quite some time taking photos, and she started to become frustrated. They were surrounded by wildlife. The sound of birds was all around them, and yet she didn't seem to be able to get a clear shot of any of them. It was like some cosmic joke where everything was hiding from her. Rationally, she knew these things happened. She knew that not every single day could be productive, and that every photographer had to deal with it now and again. It just didn't happen to her. She set the camera down on the ground, seating herself on a rock, turning her face to the sky. Closing her eyes, she listened to the sound of the valley. Nature had its own sounds, just like the city, but far from the sound of human voices. She let it seep under her skin, soak into her blood, relaxing her. "We should be going soon." Her eyes snapped open. She'd almost been able to let go of her frustration. Almost. "Right," she responded. Gathering her things, she marched over toward the stream where the horses rested. She zipped her camera up into her bag and stroked the horse's neck as she waited for him to pick up the remains of their lunch. He was still as graceful as he'd always been. It was something she'd always envied him. It flowed out of him naturally and imbued him with a sense of security that she knew he didn't always feel. She wondered what he was doing here. It had been a few months after they had gone their separate ways that she'd come to an epiphany about herself. She was looking for him. She'd read the Prophet or be walking down Diagon Alley, and she'd catch herself searching for any sign of him. She hadn't realized she'd been doing it at first, but when she thought about it, she knew it had been happening ever since they'd walked out of each other's lives. She'd spent a few days contemplating it, and then she'd packed up some things and left for France, and then kept going. She'd been running away, leaving the memories and the searching behind her. Hours had passed. They were on their way back to the ranch, as the valley was as close to it as the campsite. A breeze touched her cheeks, but it didn't cool her. She felt strange, disconnected. She wondered if she was coming down with something. Every hoofbeat grated at her, and the setting sun was angling toward her eyes. It felt like she was going to burst open at the seams. He called a rest, and as soon as her feet hit the ground, she was next to him, fists balled at her sides. "Is this your idea of a joke?" she hissed. "What are you playing at?" His hands dropping from the bag he'd been opening, he turned to look at her. "What do you mean?" he asked, a note of deadly calm in his voice. "Why are you here, Draco? This is my life. This is my story. My pictures. I've been working so hard for the last years, and why are you here?" There was a note of pleading desperation in her last question that she didn't hear. He stared at her long and hard. "This is my life, my story. Why are you here?" "Because you left," she cried, pushing at him. "Because everywhere I went, I was looking for you, in all the places we'd been, in all the places we'd planned to go. And I had to get away because the memory of you was driving me mad." He caught her wrists tightly. "It was you that walked away," he said, and she stopped trying to free her arms from his grasp. "And you didn't follow me. I know I wasn't what you really wanted, but I wanted you to come after me. I just wanted you to show that you cared enough." Straightening, she compressed her lips into a thin line and was about to speak again when he interrupted her. "I did care. More than I should have. More than I wanted to. You were too good for me." He dropped her hands. "And I've never stopped caring. I will always care. For every second, every minute, every hour, every day of my forsaken life. Para siempre." She stood rooted to the spot, her brain scrambling to understand. Without even thinking, she turned and leapt up onto her horse. He shouted after her as she raced away. Luckily, she'd been listening when he'd mentioned the way back to the ranch. He hadn't followed her. The man at the barn had spoken to her, but she didn't understand him, and she'd brushed him off as they grabbed her bag and headed toward the house. She was approaching the entrance when she heard Javi calling her name. When she didn't respond, he ran up behind her. "Ginny," he called, catching her by the arm. She stopped, still as stone, and didn't look at him. "Ginny, what's wrong?" Looking up at him, she responded with no inflection. "I'm not Ginny. I'm St. George." Yanking her arm free, she walked away. Her mind was racing but was going nowhere. The room's homey atmosphere did nothing to assuage the strangeness she was feeling. Catching sight of her laptop, she fumbled in her bag for the camera. Work would take her mind off whatever was wrong with her. It always did. She needed to download the pics she'd taken and clear the memory card for tomorrow. Sitting on the bed next to the computer and camera, she waited. The photos downloaded easily, and she disconnected the camera, looking through the shots she'd taken, trying to determine if today had been a total waste. And then she saw it. It was the picture of him looking over his shoulder at her as she'd been fascinated by his tattoo. When she'd been taking it, she'd been so focused on the art of the scene, on the way the dragon seemed ready to take flight, that she hadn't seen the way he was looking at her, hadn't chosen to see it. It felt like something in her broke, like the world shifted. It hurt. It hurt, and her mind was trying to wrap around it, and she couldn't. Tears were sliding down her cheeks as she tried to understand what was happening, what she'd done. It was though every picture she'd taken, every emotion she'd suppressed, had been lying in wait for her. The scenes danced in her mind, mixing together like a twisted pastiche, and she curled in on her side. But somewhere in the miasma of grief and pain and hurt, she felt something blossom forward, a truth she'd always known. She hadn't run away, and she hadn't ever stopped looking for him. A voice shouting outside woke her moments before the pounding on her door would have. Without waiting, Javi pushed through the doorway. "Ginny, get up," he demanded. "What's wrong?" She was worried. The last time she'd heard this tone in his voice, it had been serious. Very serious. Her stomach clenched in fear. "Fire," he said. "They're taking us out in the truck. The Savannah's on fire, and it's out of control." Adrenaline kicked in, and she shoved her shoes on her feet. She didn't have time for anything else because Javi grabbed her arm, pulling her out the side door of the ranch house and toward a waiting pickup. He exchanged words with the driver, and they hopped in the back. They were bumping along the rutted dirt road so fast that she thought she would shake loose all of her teeth when a blind panic seized her. She tried to tamp it down, but all her defenses were gone. "Where's everyone else?" she shouted to Javi. They were alone in the back. Two ranch hands sat in the cab. "Most of the men are trying to drive the cattle away from the flames. Not that they need much help. They're pretty panicked, but they're trying to keep them from heading to the gorge." "What?" she cried. Her mind spun an image of the cowboys. The cows and the peyotes being mercilessly driven closer and closer to the edge by the relentless flames. Before she knew what she was doing, she'd jumped out of the truck and taken off. The terrain here was more bushy than grassy, so it was easy for her to disappear into the night when the truck stopped and the three men searched for her. Later on, she'd secretly suspect that her magic had helped her elude them, but she could never be sure. It was easy to head in the direction of the fire. It was a dull glow on the horizon. It reminded her of sunrise, but the sinister black clouds that rose from it chilled her. No one had been in the barn when she got there, and she'd saddled up a horse and rode out. She was riding east toward the gorge when she heard voices. She kept riding, and they got louder. There was a dull roar like a rushing river in the background, and a thrill of terror raced through her as she realized it was the noise of the blaze. A shape loomed up out of the preternatural glow, startling her. The man looked astonished to see her. He called out, and two more shapes loomed out. "What the hell are you doing here?" she heard from behind her. She snapped her head to the right, relief coursing through her. His skin was glistening, and there was a dark streak down his cheek, but he looked fine. He looked angry. "I came to look for you." Her heart was beating quickly, loudly, and she wanted to run to him and away from him at the same time. "Into a wildfire?" she nodded, unable to speak. "You're out of your mind," he cried. "What if you'd missed us? What if you'd gone right up to the fire and couldn't get away?" "I had to come," she choked out. "I couldn't. I don't know what happened. I am out of my mind. I don't know why I did it, but I had to come for you. I didn't think about following you into the fire, just that I'd follow you to the ends of this world, of this life and the next, in qualquer lugar," she said, not knowing where the Portuguese had come from. It had sprung off her tongue easily, committed to memory from the phrase book as though destined for this moment. He looked at her in the dim, demonic light of the acres and acres burning near them, and laughed. "I'm out of my mind, too. I thought I could forget you." Her heart got louder and quicker, pounding in her ears. "But I don't want to forget you. I need you." Suddenly she was laughing, peals of bright sound going up and up, twining with the smoke around them and beyond into the obscured night sky. It was heady and dizzying. It was as though a weight she didn't know had been carrying had suddenly been lifted from her. It rained that night, rained and rained, and she opened herself up, letting it wash down on her and through her. Whenever anybody asked her what happened to her camera and why she doesn't use it anymore, she just shrugs and changes the subject. She doesn't miss taking pictures. And that's my Brazilian cowboy story. If you're interested in things like this, I did pull a lot of the imagery and ideas from various National Geographics. I specified that in the bottom in the author's notes, the actual dates and everything. Some of them are really interesting. So, like I said, if you're interested in that, look for them. They're probably at the library or something. A few other references that I feel like I should probably put in are about St. George. He's actually the patron saint of the city where I studied abroad, which is basically the setting where Ginny and Javi meet. It's the city of Cáceres in Spain, and every year they have a big parade in April on his saint's day, where they have this paper dragon that they like this really long when they march down the streets to the Plaza Mayor, and they Saint George fights off the Moors, and then they light the dragon on fire. So that's definitely the kind of imagery I was thinking of as well, which fed into the whole fire thing. So if you're ever in Spain and you want to go off the beaten track, definitely go there. It's the Plaza Mayor is in the middle of a medieval city, which is part of the city, and it's the second best preserved medieval city in Europe. So it's pretty sweet. It's probably a little hard to get to because it's not really, touristy, but it's definitely worth it if that's your thing. On that note, this is the end of the podcast for now. And as I said, there will be another one coming out shortly. I'm not sure of the subject, but Persephone 33 will be back. And everybody, enjoy your summer, or if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, enjoy your winter.